Long before the ascendancy of tweets and television, protest posters were a preferred way to broadcast dissenting viewpoints. Temple history professor Ralph Young's new book, Make Art, Not War, Political Protest Posters from the 20th Century, focuses on the form. Professor Young, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
And though this does focus on the 20th century, you do certainly allude to antecedents going all the way back to the colonial era.
Yes, I do. And, you know, a lot of the posters from that period of time were political cartoons and broadsides, especially in the 18th century in the lead up towards the American Revolution.
So the media was the newspaper.
Yes, yeah. And the, Benjamin Franklin's Pennsylvania Gazette, of course, was one of the really important parts of this. And an interesting thing is that just, you know, about 30 years before the revolutionary period, you had the John Peter Zenger case, which established freedom of the press, which kind of made it more difficult for the English authorities, the British authorities, to crack down on the press in that lead up to the revolution and in the period right after the Stamp Act.
Why did you choose to focus, though, on the 20th century and primarily from World War II on?
Well, this was basically going through the posters at the Tamament collection in the New York University Library. And this was a collection of posters that was in the Robert Wagner Labor Archives that were housed there. And, you know, my editor at NYU Press was very much in favor of me doing this. And she went with me one day and we went through this massive amount of posters. Some of them are, you know, about 4 by 8 feet, even that big. And then others are rather
small.
Mini
mural art project.
Exactly, yeah. And we just went through these tons of posters and kind of selected the ones that were kind of visually, kind of grabbed you visually. But also we wanted to make sure we got all of the possible subjects that we could get from this collection. And it starts pretty much in the 1930s.
With the labor movement?
With a lot of labor movement posters. And then during World War II, posters kind of by the government offices trying to, you know, get people to make sure they don't use too much sugar or too much gasoline, the whole war effort. And then some of the posters are by the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, which still exists, even though the government pretty much cracked down on it during World War I. But some of the posters are during the Vietnam War that the IWW then put out opposing the draft and the war itself.
So where the aforementioned colonial era posters, political cartoons rather, were in newspapers at the time, These posters you're alluding to, were they in magazines or tacked up on walls or poles?
Well, both. Some of them were in magazines, but most of them had, in fact, what's in the collection were actually loose posters that were meant to be printed in mass quantities and then tacked up on walls or on telephone poles or, you know, any place where, you know, people can see them.
Although, again, this focuses on poster art, even what might be called high art, Picasso comes to mind, Guernica. There's lots of, and entire schools of art were devoted to upsetting the apple cart.
Yes. Well, of course, that's what art is all about in the first place, is to upset apple carts, you know, to get people to think differently about things. And it lends itself very well to espousing a dissenting opinion. Of course, Guernica is so famous because it was Picasso's response to the first time a civilian population was bombed. You know, Hitler's Luftwaffe was, you know, practicing for World War II, basically. And that's, of course, one of the most iconic, you know, pieces of protest art that ever existed. But there are other, you know, many other pieces, other famous artists like Ben Shahn, for example. One of the posters in the book is something that he did about the Nazis' destruction of the Czechoslovakian town of Lidice after Heydrich's was assassinated by Czech partisans. But Ben Shahn, of course, that was early in his career, and he kind of went on to becoming a very famous artist. And one of his most iconic posters toward the end of his life was his McCarthy Peace Dove poster in the 1968 presidential election. Eugene McCarthy's campaign had Ben Shahn do this poster, and it was like a dove with rainbow colors on it, and just says McCarthy Peace. And that was a terrific poster back in 1968.
As we're considering political posters, I'm wondering if some might consider the iconic Barack Obama 2008 campaign poster, Hope Change, in this same category.
Yes, that is considered in that. And in a sense, Obama's election, even one could say, of course, it was not an act of dissent in a way. However, his election and his presidency.
Although the term change by definition means advancing beyond the status quo.
Yes. And in a sense, Obama himself is like the proof of how some dissent movements do have success. And I remember very much being very touched by a scene when I was watching the inauguration on television on January 20th, 2009. As Obama was approaching the lectern, John Lewis, I guess he's about 80 years old now, the congressman, stepped out and shook his hand as he was going down. Obama was shaking everybody's hand, and John Lewis was shaking his hand, and he whispered something to him. And I thought, I would love to hear what he's saying. And then the next day in the New York Times, there was a little piece about it, and it said that John Lewis said to Obama, congratulations, Mr. Obama, on becoming president. And Obama's response to him was, it's because of you, because of you. Expressing that, the Freedom Rides, the March on Selma, the sit-ins, all of this was what made January 20th, 2009 possible.
Are we talking about a bygone era, or has the heyday of political posters passed? Again, on the top, talking about the ascendancy of tweets and television.
Yeah, and that's a subject I've been thinking a lot about. And when, two of the most really important methods of expressing dissenting opinions that really get the message out in a very visceral, quick way are through art, through posters, and through music. People can listen to a song and it'll trigger something off in them that a 2-hour speech might not. So these are like really important aspects in dissent of getting that message out. However, we don't have as much of that as we do now. And I think a lot of that has to do with social media. And in some ways, we can think of political protest posters and protest songs, say, of the 60s, as the social media of their day. This is the way people got out a message that was different from the mainstream message, because anything you'd watch on the evening news was just what the powers that be wanted you to know. But the protest songs and the posters in the 60s were a way of getting out an alternative message. And I think maybe the roles of both of these forms are being taken over by Twitter and Facebook and other social media outlets, that people are getting out that alternative message and they don't need to do as much with posters or with songs. Although I still think both will exist, but maybe in not as significant of a role as they have.
Well, perhaps not as enduring the more modern social media. When you consider a Guthrie or a Seeger or the recent Nobel laureate Dylan, their words are often as compelling today as when they were written more than half a century ago. But with a tweet, with its immediacy, is it your sense that it both amplifies and perhaps dilutes the message?
Yes. And that's kind of one of the tricky things about social media. And in my other book, my narrative history of Dissent, the History of an American Idea, I talk about that at the end of the book, that with this, the social media can have a really positive effect. Can say, hey, there's going to be a demonstration today at 2:00. Everybody get out. It can spread the word and get people to be really wanting to get involved in it. However, on the other side of the coin, it's this you know, phenomenon of clicktivism or slacktivism, where somebody can do that or sign a petition or sign something online or like something and feel that they have made their contribution to it. And it's not really the same as going to the Eben Pettus Bridge and getting your head bashed in as the, you know, that physical connection to, you know, commitment to a movement like the civil rights movement had. So it can sort of trivialize things. It can kind of give a false sense of that you are part of the solution when you're not really helping to do too much of anything.
Professor, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Well, thank you.
Temple History Professor Ralph Young, his new book is entitled Make Art, Not War, Political Protest Posters from the 20th Century.